Spreading the Good Stuff, a podcast for regional women who want to thrive in their work, wellness, family and community. We share stories of triumph, challenge, growth and change in business and in life, and offer helpful insights and advice to empower you to live your best life, however that looks for you.
Welcome back to Spreading the Good Stuff. This is episode 4 in series 2. I'm Christy O'Brien.
I'm Leonie Cannon.
And I'm Katrina Myers.
Welcome back to the microphone, ladies. Lovely to be chatting with you again. How are we all?
Well, we're going to hear all about how we are throughout this podcast, aren't we, Christy?
Yes, we have. We've got lots to talk about. So we've had some amazing, you know, feedback from our last episode, and I think we flagged in our socials when episode 3 went up that, you know, we just wanted to talk about some stuff happening in the community, in the wider community as well, and in the media, and particularly just around, I suppose, hate speech and ethics and morals and where that sits with a freedom of speech as well. Because I think it's something that people get a bit confused with, or they hear the hate speech or see it on the news and they just don't want to kind of hear about it or read into it because it is quite confronting. But I think we've come to a stage in society, thankfully, that people just, you know, call it out and won't tolerate it anymore. And I know for us, as we said on our socials, like we will call bullshit on it every day of the week. And unfortunately, that's what we're going to be talking about today, and it is a challenge, but we will certainly be spreading some good stuff as well. And I want to start with, I suppose, for me, my what I've been up to and what has been filling my cup, I suppose. And recently I've been celebrating the success of my amazing husband, who has been working at his job for nearly 25 years, and he was crowned number one in the state in his field the other weekend, which was incredible. And he's so humble, and kind of as they were calling out the you know, the top seven, he'd been in the top seven for the last couple of years, and they got past 6 and 5 and 4, and he'd been, I think, in the top 4 or 5, and then he got to number 2, and I'm like, oh, maybe you're going to miss out this year. And when they called him out number one, it was just amazing. And just to, I suppose, stop and take stock of all the work and effort he's put in and the way he goes about what he does, I'm super proud. And it's just really nice to cheer from the sidelines, because often when you're in the trenches and doing the thing, as we all do every week in, week out, you probably don't stop to go, oh, you're doing such a great job. Do we? Enough.
No, not at all. And do you know what, as you're speaking there, Christy, I think the thing too that's so extraordinary about Troy is he's working in an industry that's kind of lumped in with used car salesmen and journalists, you know.
I know.
Real estate agents. Like, they have a really tough time of it, don't they, in terms of how society perceives them. And Troy is just, he should be the pin-up boy for that industry because, as you say, he's so humble. He's just the loveliest guy you could ever hope to meet, and he just gives that industry the very best name that it could ever have. I'm so excited for him. That's and he's lovely. So deserved.
And I think he's always risen to the top and risen above the bullshit. And it's funny because he's a Collingwood supporter, and he's the most non-likely Collingwood supporter out there. Apologies to all the Collingwood supporters. But, you know, it's funny how you just sort of go about your business and it's really great. So anyway, that was wonderful, and we celebrated. We had a night in the city, and you know, went to my favourite little whiskey bar, which I love down there. And, so it was really great. It's just been wonderful. And that's what's been feeling good for me. Also, just, I suppose, looking back on that time, like Troy started in real estate when we got back from our overseas trip that we did for a year backpacking when we were like 21 and 23 or 4. And we've actually just booked our trip back to Europe, our first time in 25 years, which is so exciting. And we're visiting all these places that we went as backpackers 25 years ago, like literally staying around the corner from places we stayed because I kept all the notes and guidebooks and journals from back then. And it is going to be amazing. And, this is our third attempt to get back there because of the pandemic and other things that have happened. So, I'm just pumped about that. And once you kind of click the button and confirm stuff, like it feels really real, you know.
That's exciting. When are you heading?
In June, so in the winter time. And last time we were in Europe, it was winter and we had no money. I think we ate out once in the whole time we were in Europe because we were backpacking. So to actually be able to go to a few places and, you know, and eat and drink will be so cool. So that's kind of me. What about you, Leigh? I know you've had a bit of a challenging week with a sore back, but how are you going?
Yeah, the smile on my face is a fake one, to be honest. Funny, our last recording, which went to air earlier this week, but we only did this time last week, didn't we? I remember talking about the fact that there wasn't a lot of wiggle room in my life and I knew that I needed to create some space for that, not thinking about my own health but thinking about others around me. And then lo and behold, 3 days later when I was at the gym on Monday, in the middle of a set of power cleans of all things, I did a real number on my back. And I've been pretty much flat on my back in bed for the whole week. Yesterday was my first day up on my feet. So it's been really, really nasty. Today is starting to get a little bit of relief. So that's something to celebrate. But it's just, it's made for a tough week and it's put me behind in all of my work and everything else. But I can smile about it because these things always happen. If you don't make room, life makes room for it, doesn't it? It happens. So it's just been that reminder to me to, I knew that I was burning the candle at both ends and I knew that I needed to make the space and I just hadn't probably quite done it and now it's happened for me. But anyway, other than that, all is, going along pretty well. So that's kind of where I'm at. That's been the challenge for the week and what I need. I'm going to get in about an hour's time when we finish this recording, which is the magic hands of my physio, Sean Slattery. Shout out to Sean. He's the magic man. So I'll be seeing him shortly and I'm sure that I will be feeling back to my normal self or close to on the weekend. What about you, Katrina?
Oh, yes. Well, how am I feeling right now is I actually feel really fabulous today, like lots of energy. It's actually my dad's anniversary today. Like it's 26 years since he died, but I feel really quite, I don't know, I've got this kind of sense of, well, my heart's racing now as I talk about it actually, but I just feel sort of, I think since doing the retreat and like I've just been talking about it more, there just feels like a real release for me around it or something, like a comfort. And I went and up to where we spread his ashes this morning and just like stood there and really like just felt it and leaned in and just connected and so nice. And I've just had such a big experience over the last sort of fortnight, since last week really, since our International Women's Day event, which we're going to share and we're going to talk about it and we're going to unpack it because it's been a roller coaster for me but such a learning experience and something that I've really, initially I was like, well, I don't want to sort of talk about it because it just amplifies it. But then I went to like, actually, no, we do need to talk about this stuff. And it's a great teaching opportunity and we can all learn from it and we can support each other. And, you know, one of my greatest passions is to support women to be able to show up and shine and to, you know, we've got to teach people how to do that because criticism and negativity is inevitable. It's always going to be there. So we've got to learn to manage it. So it's been a real, really interesting week just with all of those feels. And I always have big emotions around Dad's anniversary, but it's just, it's just a sort of a sense of calm.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I read your newsletter yesterday and I just feel like everything you're saying now, like, and the articulation that you have around all this stuff, like, you just nailed it, you know, like, particularly coming off a challenging week personally with this issue with the International Women's Day and then with your dad's anniversary, like that shift, I think within you is, I felt that shift in your words. Like I just felt like you just nailed it. And then even though like, you know, when I say nailed it, like it's a process, isn't it? Like, you know, we learn and we grow and we have setbacks and we have issues, but I just feel like you, I just thought what you had in that newsletter was really, really well written and well said. And I could feel it in the words and so well done. Bravo.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Well, I guess one thing I wanted to reference and to recommend to listen to was Samuel Johnson's interview on The Imperfects. That was actually going to be one of the things I'm loving this week. But it really kind of just reminded me and inspired me again. And it's always with me, obviously. And Dad is my greatest inspiration for all the work I do, really, you know. And it just was like, okay, it's a good opportunity to talk about and highlight. There's still a stigma. There's still so much around suicide that we don't talk about. And, you know, anniversaries and his birthday have always been sort of layered with extra challenge because we can't and we don't celebrate it as such. You know, when, like I shared in my newsletter, a lot of people when they have an anniversary or a birthday of a parent that they've lost, it's a celebration. They come together and they remember and they tell stories. And we've just never done that for Dad, you know. And it's always something that I have really struggled with internally. And so I think that's why today I've got this more sense of freedom because I've kind of shared that. And, you know, the kids and Tim and I all talked about it this morning and, you know, I told them that I went up there. And so it's just that sort of that sense of openness and you know, and Samuel really did inspire me in that way that, you know, like something that I feel so strongly about is suicide is not selfish. And the way we have all this stigma, we forget, it's a bit like people who criticize, they forget the impact that has on the people left behind because the person who's taken their life is gone, you know, so they're not worried about feeling selfish. And we know that you know, they had all of their reasons to do that. So the ones that are left with all that stigma and that pain and all that struggle of having to feel like they're unloved and all of that stuff are the family that are left behind. So I just felt really, you know, like just inspired to talk about that and share. And I think it's just a really important conversation. So there was that. And then what I want to talk to you guys about and get you guys to share on too is dealing with criticism, because last week following the International Women's Day event, which we talked about, which was such a fabulous event, someone decided to write a letter to the editor of our paper, basically like being very critical of the event and, you know, directly critical of me and the speakers. And it was just a really like, just quite a horrible article, quite ridiculous, really, and not an accurate representation of what anyone else experienced at the event. And I really feel the editor should never have printed it. And after the initial sort of like, oh, this is awful, gut-wrenching, oh, heart-racing, this is horrible, then I kind of realised that I was actually able to move through it quite quickly, and I've actually now got quite good tools to deal with criticism and negativity. And so I wanted to share that with other people, and I wanted to talk to you guys about how have you dealt with criticism? Because this is what I think the conversation we need to have is, we're never going to stop people being critical or negative, you know, and the more you show up and the more you be your authentic self, the more it really challenges other people who maybe don't feel that in themselves or for whatever reason they're not feeling good about themselves. So we've got to equip women, particularly women, and that's our main audience, with the tools to cope. So, I mean, you know, just for example, one of the things I did was, of course, I sent it to you guys. I sent it to my core people and I say, righto, how do we deal with this? You know, like that is one of my... Like,
what the fuck is going on here? It's kind of like a collective, what the, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Sorry about the dog barking in the background. That's Bubbles. She's ridiculous. She loves to bark her head off. So, you know, so what are the strategies or what have you guys done and how have you dealt with criticism in the past or negativity? And it's not feedback, because feedback is constructive that you've probably asked for. I class this as just unwanted criticism from someone that you don't really, you know, love and respect, basically. So how have you dealt with that?
A couple of things. I, without doubt, believe that probably the number one thing that holds women back from showing up and from putting themselves out there and from having a voice in the world is that fear of criticism.
Totally.
I can't think of one other bigger reason that would hold women back.
And it's not even in the having like saying things out in the society, it's even saying things within your family group and your friend group. And, you know, when I was younger, I was really, you know, fearful of what my family would think if I spoke out about something and, you know, and good, bad or otherwise, like it's sort of it's hard to know where that line is, but it is the fear and I suppose the lack of confidence as well, you know.
And what you're saying, Christy, too, is that it's because that number one feeling that we need or one of those really important aspects of life is to feel that sense of belonging. And so as soon as we, you know, share an opinion or put some kind of work out into the world, whatever it might be, we run that risk of if people criticize us, then it's like an attack on that sense of belonging. So it is, I really believe it's the number one thing that would hold people back from putting themselves out there. And absolutely, I feel like I've grappled with that my whole life in that.
Yeah.
And as women.
Yeah, exactly. And when you're talking about your dad, you know, Katrina, and people who say, you know, suicide selfish, they probably think, well, that's their opinion. They can just say that, you know, because that's my opinion. But people aren't thinking about the impact, as you said, it's having on other people. And that's where having an opinion or voicing your opinion and freedom of speech, in inverted commas, you know, is not the same as, you know, it can be hate, a form of hate speech. And that's where people get a bit, you know, confused. And recently this came up as far as, you know, hate speech and how to deal with it, you know. And I was watching Offsiders on ABC, which is the sports show after Insiders on a Sunday. And they were talking about the young 15-year-old boy who was racially abusing a player in the NRL. He was in the crowd and he got you know, caught on camera, and he got, you know, family got involved, and they were going to ban him for life, you know, because it was terrible what he said. And but the player who was being racially abused said, I don't want to ban him for life. Like, I want to use this as a learning experience. Let's teach him what's right and what's wrong, and let's, you know. And on this Offsiders show, there was an old respected journalist on there who actually does kind of call himself, what is it, male, pale and stale. Is that how some people refer to sort of old white men who kind of have been doing things a certain way for a long time? And he calls himself that. But he came out and said, well, I think they've blown this out of proportion. And, you know, if you put the focus on it, then it becomes bigger, you know, like it blows it up, you know. And the young guy who was sitting on the panel, who's the captain of the Melbourne Storm, I can't remember his name, he just said, I completely disagree. He said, if we ignore this stuff, it won't go away. And he really stood up, you know, in a really respectful way to this old guy, you know, who knew a lot and had been around forever. And he put him in his box. And it was so good to see, because this guy was young and perhaps wouldn't have had the confidence, you know, in a previous era to kind of stand up and say, well, I think we should call this out. And it was a really powerful moment for me, because often we see those things happen in the media or even in our community and we don't speak out against it. We don't, because it might cause an argument or we don't want to kind of upset the person. But he was really respectful and just said, well, I think that we need to talk about this. And I had a conversation with a friend yesterday who said, you know, I can't believe, yeah, we're having these conversations, you know, and she didn't like the fact that we had to talk about this hate speech and what was happening in Melbourne on the weekend, you know, like, and a politician came out and said, well, some forms of hate speech are okay, but others aren't. And I'm like, hang on a minute, I call bullshit on that. You know, there is no grey here. It's either hate speech or it's not. And if it is personal and directed to an individual, particularly a minority group, it is hate speech. It's not freedom of speech.
So I've got lots of things to say, Chris, but just on that, what is the difference then? What, like, all these freedom of speech advocates, like, I get freedom of speech and I know that's fundamentally important and everything. So what is the gap between hate speech? Like, how do we define hate speech versus freedom of speech? And I've heard some, we were going to actually reference this excellent interview on Sarah Wilson's podcast, and I've heard him speak about it. But, like, what's your take on that? Like, what's, how do we, like, you know, because this seems to be where all the sort of the hardcore conservatives, like really advocates of free speech, kind of like, they sort of say you can say anything you want, but there is a line, right?
There's absolutely a line.
Yeah. And I don't know, Lee, sorry, did you want to go?
Well, no, all I was going to say is I don't know the formal definition or the difference between freedom of speech and hate speech. All I can say is in my mind, I would just hope that anytime we're voicing any kind of opinion, and this would be for anyone, that we just have to be so careful that our, you know, that any, and I think people come out in these kinds of settings and like they did on the weekend because they're, in their mind, they're very passionate about a particular issue and they're fighting for this, what they believe is this, you know, a freedom or an individual freedom or a group freedom as they see it. But we've just got to be so careful that any time that we are fighting for any kind of individual freedom, that we're not doing it in a way that is just a complete and callous disregard for the rights of other humans. So it can never, our opinions can never just be absolute and, you know, unqualified, because every opinion we have has some kind of impact on somebody else. So I don't know if that's answering the question, but I think hate speech is absolutely coming out with something that has no disregard whatsoever for the impact that it will have on those other human beings that you know, are directly affected by this. Whereas a freedom of speech, I would hope that it is done in a way that has some sense of regard.
And I think sometimes there's hate. There's hate for the sake of hate. You know, like some people just want to hate for the sake of hate, just for, you know, just because they get that, you know, a kick out of it. And I think for me, like, freedom of speech is so important when you want people to protest and speak out about things that are impactful on the community. And it might be laws or regulations or changes in government policy or, you know, wars and whatever. But I think when protests and, you know, speech is about individual people's choices of sexual preference or, you know, gender or, you know, or the way they look, like, that's where it just, and for me, that I agree, Lee, like, it's black and white, like, there's no grey there, like, it's just, you know, but again, it's layered with people's preconceived conceptions and ideas and upbringings and all that stuff. There's no solution.
Well, that's the thing, that's the trouble, you know, and that's what I was going to say, like, the thing is, and when you think about on a small scale of that, the person who wrote this article to the paper, like, they haven't done the work, you know, like, they don't have the self-awareness or the self-love or the self-respect to go and to be critically analytical and emotionally intelligent enough to think, how is this going to affect the person I'm writing this about, you know? And all of those people, I mean, you would assume that they're all dealing with their own issues, not that it's any bloody excuse whatsoever, but I think this is where it's hard because so few people have the ability to have this level of emotional intelligence that needed and the critical awareness to, you know, actually think about what they're doing. I mean, by and large, the other thing is, though, too, to keep it in perspective, you know, the thing is with this woman who wrote this article to the paper, one person from the entire event. And then what we tend to do is just focus on that.
Who didn't, Katrina, also, sorry to interrupt, who didn't even put their name to that letter to the editor.
That's right.
It was under a pseudonym.
That's right, exactly.
So, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, that protest in Melbourne, that, I think it was 30 men. You know, I mean, it's not, in the scheme of things, like, huge impact, but not many people, you know. And it's like, so we do have to keep that in perspective. Like, there is a lot of people who, and you know, that's what I was so encouraged about to move on to, like, what the silver lining of all of this from this what experience that I had is the community have been amazing, you know, like, the feedback, the messages, like, people don't tolerate it anymore. And it was so cool to see that so many people were like, that's not okay, you know. And this week in the paper, there's a beautiful letter to the editor from wonderful Annie Barr, who, like, she wrote a letter. And then Don Douglas, who's like an elderly man from out at Corbell, wrote an article, which I was like, how cool is that? You know, so I do think that we are, you know, we do have to focus on the fact that there are a lot of people now, you know, even in the community of Barham, who see this stuff and go, that's not okay, and they're prepared to call it out. And I do think we've come a long way on that, because 20 years ago, you know, that wouldn't have happened. 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago. So, you know, and, like, people are calling it out more and more. So I think that is very positive and very encouraging. So I'm excited about that.
And I think it comes back to the responsibility of the people kind of in charge, you know, like, the editor of the paper should have had a better moral compass on this. And you know, like, he probably saw it as freedom of speech. Well, it's actually not, because no one benefits from an article like that. I mean, other than a bit of learning along the way and people kind of going, well, I'm going to come out and support. Same with this, you know, hate speech rallies in Melbourne. Like, you know, the state government came out really firm on that. Like, some other politicians were a bit wishy-washy about it, and they said no. Like, no. Whereas in the past, you might go, oh, well, you want to keep everyone happy. No, this is not, because if they don't take a stand, then the rest of the people in society won't take a stand either. They have to lead by example.
Exactly.
And that comes down to, in terms of that particular media organisation, I know it's a local community paper, but that doesn't matter. I mean, whoever is running that paper has an ethical obligation in this situation. And I know there's not, as someone who has worked in the media in the past, there's no specific rules around, particularly here in Australia, governing whether you would publish a letter to the editor anonymously or under a pseudonym. There's no specific rules stopping them from doing it, but it becomes a real ethical question. And most, the absolute majority of newspapers in our country have policies to say that they will not publish a letter to the editor that is anonymous. Those letters have to come with a full name, with an address. And look, this letter may have come with a full name and an address and they've requested it be anonymous or under a pseudonym. I don't know. That may have happened. I would hope that at least the editor made checks and ensured that this was a, you know, somebody that they knew and that it was they'd done all that kind of background, because they have to determine that this person is real and does exist before they can publish it. But if they then asked to remain anonymous, that only happens in a very, very, very select number of cases where a paper will publish a letter to the editor under a pseudonym or anonymity. And that is usually only in the case where, if they were to publish that person's name, there would be really dire consequences for them. You know, that they might be exposed to violence or loss of job, or that it might expose that they were perhaps a victim of sexual assault or anything really serious like that. It's not enough to just be in the public interest. There has to be some really serious things that sit behind that. So I think in this case, it's just a real error in judgment that the editor of that paper has let it slip through, and it's just really disappointing to see that it's happened. But I love to hear that there have been people in the community that have taken it in their own hands to write and, you know, set things straight.
And I think we talked about this on recent podcast conversations about, you know, all the terrible stuff that Lisa Miller was copying online as well, and you know, and the newspapers that reported what had been said about her, like, you know, in the interest of the public, like, bullshit. They did not have to do that. And even the news for on the weekend, I noticed on the ABC TV news, they didn't show any footage of those rallies on the weekend. And they spelled it out and said, out of respect, and, you know, we don't want to, you know, give them we're not actually going to show it. They talked about it, they reported on it. I thought, you know what, that's excellent, because people see that and it kind of fuels the fire. And it, yes, you've got to talk about it, but you've got to do it in a way that's respectful to the people who've, you know, been abused. You know, like the people that they were hate speeching against on the weekend, like, you know, transgender people are, you know, like the suicide rate amongst transgender people is just harrowing. And I just think it's terrible that, you know, and I, again, as you said, Katrina, it's only 30 people and the majority of the community supports people in their choices, but it's just, it's so awful. It just shouldn't be allowed in any way, shape or form.
And so I know, Katrina, the question you asked at the start was, how do we help people with the tools to cope with this kind of thing? And that is really important. So that's a question we need to answer. But the bigger, I think, well, whether it's bigger or equally as important to that, is just teaching people, or really encouraging people, to think before they speak, you know, to actually take individual responsibility about the consequences that their opinions or their work, you know, what it is that they're putting out into the world, will have on other people. Yes, we need to build the resilience and the tools to be able to cope with criticism when it comes, because it will come inevitably. But if we can all just do a little bit better in the first place and mind our words and make sure that where we can, and there are ways and means of offering feedback to people, and there are times when we do need to give constructive criticism. But I just think if it can be done respectfully at all times, then that has an impact at the other end in terms of the person who needs to deal with that criticism.
Yes, and I will add to that, do your work. I always have Glennon Doyle's voice. Oh, I think it was actually on the Brené Brown one when she did it with her sisters, and, you know, someone road raged her and she wanted to wind the window down and yell out, do your work. And I feel like that is what it's about, right? We all just do the work so we don't have to be assholes.
Yes. Yes.
Like, that's what it comes to.
That needs to be a bumper sticker. Can we all do the work so we don't have to be assholes?
Do the work so we don't have to be an asshole. That's great.
Yes, because that's what it comes down to.
Exactly. And as you said, Lee, I think for me, that kind of, you know, all just doing a little bit better, for me, that starts within yourself. It starts within your family. It starts within your, you know, your friendship group, your extended family. And it is hard, because sometimes you have to kind of speak out about stuff or go, actually, that's not right. You know, we can't do that, which is hard to do, particularly when you don't know people, you know, well, or if you know people too well, you know, actually call bullshit on what people are saying. And I just feel like, you know, that we need to kind of we need to change the tone. And I think even in the media and in, you know, politics and sport, it becomes too personal as well. Like, there are going to be things that you don't agree with, like rules about this or rules about that, but keep it about the rules. not about the individual. Because as soon as it becomes on that individual level, that's where it becomes really hateful.
And I think, Chris, to take that step further, like it comes down to those things we were talking about earlier about our core needs for safety, connection, to feel love. So often when, you know, say we're in a situation where we start to gossip about someone else or we start to judge someone else or we want to be critical, it's because we're actually trying to build connection with the people that we're with. So we talked about this before, but, you know, so there's so many sort of layers to it, because often the people who are being critical are yearning for connection and belonging themselves. So they feel like this is a way that they can belong. And that need to feel safe, that need to belong, that need for connection is huge for everybody. And we all try to get it in different ways. And so I think it's just really important to understand that next layer for people and to have that empathy. And the reason, you know, I mean, as I said, I really toed and froed about why to talk about this. And there is all those arguments to say it amplifies it and all of that. But for me, it's really about equipping people. And this is such an important conversation because it is so layered, you know, and it is an empathetic conversation, understanding the people who are criticizing and the people who are being criticized and how we all have these needs. And it's just really, really important. And I don't want someone to look at this stuff and go, oh, well, I'm never speaking up because I might get criticized. It's like the opposite of that. Just accept that it will happen. People haven't done their work. There's always going to be people out there who want to tear you down. Like, it's just expect it and be prepared and be ready for how you're going to manage it. And, you know, just know that actually now it's okay to talk about it all, and it's just something that we know we have to deal with, you know?
And so what are some ways that we can deal with it? I know, Katrina, you shared that brilliant podcast with Glenn and Doyle where they unpacked ways of dealing with some really practical ways of dealing with criticism and negativity. Do we want to kind of run through that a little bit or share some more personal ways that we deal with it?
I've actually got something that I do, and it comes back to empathy, which Katrina was talking about before. And I do this loving kindness meditation for people who've challenged me or criticized or, you know, hated on me or people I love. And it works so bloody well. But it's that empathy, and I feel like we all need to, you know, like this young rugby league supporter, like, don't ban him for life. Like, hate doesn't equal hate. You know, like an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. So this loving kindness meditation, which has, you know, been around forever and everyone kind of offers it from a meditation point of view, I'll put it in the show notes, because if you do this loving kindness meditation where you send love out into the world to people that you know, people that you don't know, just to everyone, but also to an individual person or people that have challenged you, it actually changes your perspective on how you feel about them, which it might not change them, but it actually changes the way you view it, which I think is really powerful, because it's doing the work and it's actually changing, you know, because that kind of gut-wrenching kind of awful feeling you have towards someone can be really damaging, not just mentally, but physically and emotionally. Like, it's, you know what it's like when you have those moments. Like, and you would have felt that, Katrina, instantly when you read that letter. You would have felt like you've been kicked in the guts, you know. And we've all had times over the years we might have had an issue with someone, whether it be family, friend or foe, and it can really eat away at you on the inside, like really eat away. So to do something like this loving kindness meditation, which might sound a bit woo-woo for people, but it actually works, and you can just follow it. It's guided meditation, so that's what I would suggest. But it's not very, you know, mind-blowing, but it's simple.
Yeah, I love it. I was thinking about it too, and I have had many of these instances, and I think in all of our kind of lines of work, and I've been writing my whole life, and, you know, it was used to be in the media and now more freelancing. But if you're in any kind of work where you're putting something out into the world, opinions, writing something creative, whatever it might be, you're going to come up against some kind of judgment or criticism or just feedback in general. So for me, just in thinking about how I've dealt with it over the years, I think the thing that works best for me is to not react or respond quickly, to just sit with it for a bit, even though that is mightily uncomfortable, but to just not make any rash kind of decisions on how to respond to things. I usually like to try and sleep on it, just to gather my thoughts, do a bit of journaling before I come back with any kind of response. So it's just giving yourself that time to have a bit of a think on how you will respond to it. Resisting that temptation, which is enormous anytime that you get some kind of criticism, resisting the temptation to retreat. That is just the most natural human response, isn't it, to just go quiet? And I have been guilty. I've definitely responded in that way in the past as well, but I feel like I'm getting a lot better at that as I get older. Surrounding yourself, as you did, Katrina, with your cheerleaders, with those people that, you know, have your back, even if you might not agree on absolutely everything, but they have your back 100%, and you know that they'll offer you really wise counsel and support. And just to know that that you're not alone, and that this one piece of criticism that might have come in, I guess, help those people can help you test that. Is it true? Is it correct? Is it actually feedback about my work, or is it more personal kind of criticism about me as a person? So those cheerleaders really help. And then the final one, I think, for me, and the best way, I love the meditation too, Chris, but the best way then is to go out and help educate people to do better. And that's what I feel like. I know we had a discussion about, do we give this airtime in a conversation between us? But if we can give it airtime in a way that helps people to do better and to educate people, then, you know, hopefully next time it might not happen, or it's less, or the criticism is actually constructive criticism that you can deal with and you can grow from and get better, because criticism and feedback does help us to grow and get better, but so long as it's done in a respectful way and that's not just a personal attack. So they're probably the tools, that practical tools, that have helped me over time. What about you, Katrina? I know you spoke about the few things that you did do in this last week that were helpful for you.
Yeah, so very similar to all of you guys. The first one I would say is, like, do check in with yourself, like, just and feel where you feel it in your body. Like, that was something that was really, I really noticed this time. Like, my heart just started racing as soon as I read it, but I, like, checked in. And that can be a real clue as to, like, why it's so triggering for you. And, you know, it's that thing. It's like tapping into your heart, because it disconnects you from feeling loved and feeling safe. And that's the thing about when you criticize, like, it does tap into that, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Feeling safe is one of the core things. So check in with your body, see how it's making you feel, and then, ask yourself, okay, like, is this from someone who actually is important to me, that I care about their opinion, or is it just some random who I don't even know their name? you know, so is it worth taking on board? And Abby's quote from the thing was, you don't have to accept criticism from anyone that doesn't actually know you. You know, because how can someone criticize you if they don't know you, they don't know your story, they don't know what you've been through, they have no idea about you, you know? So that is such an important thing to remember. And then I think, just learn from it, you know, like, use it as a learning experience. And that's what I have really done this time, is, like, use it as an absolute learning experience and a teaching experience, and just talk to your support people. And the other thing is, know who your support people are. Like, just stop and get your support people prepared. Like, think about who in your life, who are the ones that might be, like, just love to have a gossip and go down a rabbit hole with it and might sort of actually embellish it more. And who are you sort of, which sometimes you need to do that too. Like, sometimes you have to have a fun and just go, bloody hell, that was awful, you know.
Yeah. And then, absolutely, I would say that's how Christy and I responded initially, didn't we?
That's right. And that's normal too. Like, it's normal to do that. Like, you're going to have that reaction.
Because we're protecting you.
Yeah. Exactly. And then it's like, okay, but who are the people who are actually going to help me process this, move through it, have the tools to actually get through it, you know? And I think that's really, really important. Know who those people are. And then another thing that did really help me is, and I think it's a slippery slope from empathy to judgment as well, but having empathy for the person that has written it, you know, and really trying to go, okay.
It says a lot more about them than it does about you.
That's right. And then, like I realised, it can then be a slippery slope into, well, they're an asshole and they're bitter and they're blah, 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 blah. But if you can just sit in the empathy, then that's really helpful, because it really does help you to understand. And, like, that is certainly the place that I sit with everybody these days. It's like, I really try to just be as limited on the judgment as I can and really be like, okay, what's happened to them, not what's wrong with them, you know, what's going on for them. And I think that helps so much. And the last thing I wanted to read to you, like, I just love this line so much out of the Glennon Doyle podcast. So it's the five ways to deal with criticism, I think it was. We'll link it in the show notes. But another really cool phrase that they said is this feedback that you could make right without abandoning yourself? And I was like, oh, you know, so if it's from someone that you love and respect and your core people, then they'll know if the feedback is actually still true to who you are, and if it's like, if you're still able to be your authentic self if you take this criticism on board. Whereas if it's someone who's just being super critical, then chances are they're criticizing you as your authentic self, and you'd have to change who you really are, like to fit in rather than belong to yourself, to actually adapt to that criticism. And then you know it's not okay, because staying true to yourself and being your authentic self is the key thing. And often that's actually what people will find confronting, because a lot of people find it really hard to be their true authentic selves. And when they see someone else actually sitting in authenticity and just fully being themselves, it's very challenging for them. So never take it on board if you actually have to shift away from what is true and integrity to you, and you have to sort of fit in rather than belong to yourself. So I thought that was so powerful.
And it's kind of like actually reminded me of a couple of other things too, Katrina, similar to that. Like I think once you've, as you said, like check in with yourself, and you were saying to Lee, like sit with it, but then kind of distance yourself from it as well. Like don't let it own you or define you, you know, like with anything that happens, often you do things wrong and you go, oh, I'm so hopeless because of this, you know, but that thing doesn't actually define who you are. You can go, well, I did that yesterday and I'm not going to go back and do that again. You know, like don't let actions or other people's actions define you. You know, that, because I think that can be really tricky as well, because even though you might say all this stuff on the outside and be doing all the work, you can still have this little voice in your head going, well, you are this and you are that. So self-talk's really important here as well, isn't it?
It is, and testing its veracity. So depending on whatever the criticism is, really testing it and then looking for evidence otherwise, which we all have. And I, in that episode, Katrina, that you shared with Glenn and Doyle, I love how they talk about when we're trying to determine what criticism we do take on board and what we don't. She uses that kind of analogy of sorting the mail, doesn't she? And I love that, like that, you know, we put something out into the world, an opinion, a piece of work, whatever it might be, it's like putting it into the mailbox and off it goes. And then when we go and check it the next day, you're going to have a letterbox full of mail. And then it's about sorting it. And essentially she is kind of saying that at least 95% of that mail is junk mail once you go through it, because it may be that the criticism is not directed at your work. It's and particularly as women, it's directed at you, the way you look, or it may be directed at your personality. You might be too much, you might be
too ambitious,
you know, too difficult, whatever, too ambitious, all that stuff. Or about relationships, you know, which that often happens, doesn't it? Well, you know, or she might be good at her job, but well, I wouldn't want to be her child or her husband or whatever it might be. So if it's about, yeah, looks, personality, relationships, that's just easy junk mail. You don't even consider it. But then it comes down.
But I feel we do put so much weight into those things, Lee, because it's all people talk about, all that stuff. You know, like, yes, junk mail, but it's junk mail that people freaking read and want to hold on to.
But mostly only if you're a woman. So when a man is receiving any kind of criticism, those three issues don't ever come into play.
Totally.
If a man is criticised, 99.9% of the time it will be about his work.
Yep.
So we have to sort the mail first.
The other one for women is the contribution, which I thought Glennon's take on that was hilarious, because and this article actually criticised my involvement in the community too. You know, Glennon has started a Rising Together fund that's raised $45 million and they still say she's not doing enough. So, you know, I mean, honestly, like, and that's the point, that it doesn't matter what level you're at either, no, you know, or what you've achieved or what you've done or what you've contributed or how you look, someone will always criticise it. And I think that's the funny things for women too, that, again, no one would criticise a man for not contributing enough, you know, like, really. I mean, maybe they would, but not as much, you know. So, yeah, I think they're all such good points, Lee.
Yeah, and it really comes back to supporting yourself, like, in doing the work, as you said, but also supporting each other. Like, when you see someone has copped it, you know, like, come out in support of them, even if it's just privately and you don't want to put it on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, like, just reaching out to someone and saying, you know, like, that was really shit, I hope you're okay, because, you know, you're an awesome person, or, you know, whatever, because it does happen, and we often sit on our hands and don't do anything. You know, like,
well, Chris, as I said, that has been the most beautiful thing to come out of all of this. And I would say even the private messages are more important, yes, you know, because actually, yeah, putting it on Facebook or going to a letter to the editor, that can sometimes just fuel it, you know. But the private messages mean so much. And I have had so many lovely private messages. And, you know, how cool to be that cheerleader for someone else. Like, I love that so much, you know.
And what message helps the most? I'm thinking if our natural response when we receive some kind of criticism is to go into that kind of retreat mode and be quiet, is the best kind of support to receive from someone, and messages of support is that is us saying and kind of making that commitment to don't be quiet, like keep going, keep doing it, keep doing the thing, keep using the voice.
Definitely. And, you know, we love hearing from you. Well, I love hearing from you. All the work you're doing is great. Just keep showing up. Like, that's the best compliment to anyone.
That's a really lovely way to actually just tie a bow on this conversation, because I feel like we've done the ups and the downs and the roundabouts and whatever. So we probably should finish today. I know you already shared something that you were loving, Trina, but you might need to think of something else. I'm going to start, if that's okay. And I just want to say that I'm loving the weather. I love autumn so, so much. And even though it's pretty dark in the morning, I just love the Christmas, and I love the fact that I can get out in my garden. I kind of have a disconnect with my garden in the summertime because it's too hot to kind of get out there, and my garden's pretty self-sufficient, but I'm just itching to get some dirt under my fingernails. And so I'm just loving the fact that I'm hopefully going to have some time in the garden on the weekend. And I love autumn because it just is a beautiful time of year. So that's pretty simple. That's me.
That's beautiful.
Lee, do you want to go next?
Okay. I hadn't really thought about this, but just as you're speaking, two things. You know me, and I don't really have much of a relationship with television. I don't really watch TV, but because this week I have spent a lot of time on my back, I have to find some ways to entertain myself. And I got into it. Lots of people have recommended it, but I've watched a bit of White Lotus. Have any of you?
Oh, love it. So much better.
Bloody great, bloody hilarious. It's a bit of a black sort of comedy, but if you haven't checked that out, get on and have a look at that. But the other thing that I'm loving, and this week that I've loved, is just my caring, nurturing, empathic boys, my husband and my three sons, since I hurt my back on Monday. They have been, oh my goodness, I feel like I'm tearing up just talking about, thinking about how they've all been. And I haven't asked for one thing other, I've been in a world of hurt, but Craig has just been amazing with picking up all the slack and, you know, doing everything around the house and finishing work early for kids and running all of them around. But the boys are just getting me, you know, one will come in with a glass of water without me asking, or just in the morning coming in and checking in how you're feeling and did you get any sleep. And I just, it's just the best feeling when you see your kids stepping up in these times, because, you know, you're there for, I'm there for them all the time and doing all these things for them, and usually so healthy and don't really suffer any kind of sickness or anything like this. So to have had a week where I've really had to take help from all of them, and to see them just step up and do it without being asked, I've just got a heart full of, you know, gratitude and just thanks for them and how wonderful they've been. Goes to show you don't need girls. I'm surrounded by four boys and they have pressed no end.
And I was only thinking that, like, kids can be pretty self-centered, you know, like, and they're just kind of built that way, and they're that way for, you know, some are different, but they're that way until a certain age. I don't know what the age is. Hopefully it's not too late. But, you know, the world focuses around them and their needs and all that sort of stuff. So it is.
Yeah, it just makes me feel like they're going to be okay in the world.
Yes, of course they will, guaranteed.
That's what I'm loving. What about you, Kat?
Yeah, okay, so a couple of things. I will just mention the community again. So loving our community for all their support, just absolutely awesome. So much progress. Ted Lasso is back. Yeah, Ted Lasso is my all-time favourite series. Like, we all need to channel Ted Lasso. He is the best. The show is the best. The key female role leaders are incredible. Like, it is just the best show, and I get so excited about it. This week's episode was just an absolute cracker. Like, I was wetting myself laughing so many times. I swim between, like, happy tears and laughing so much. And if you haven't watched it, it is just, oh, so good for the soul.
I haven't watched that.
I didn't know that it was out again. I'm so excited about that.
Was it like series three or something? Like, is it?
What series three, is last series, never, this will be the last one, which I'm very sad about already, but, you know, it's so, so good.
Actually,
and Lee, the other one is just, sorry.
Just on that White Lotus, Lee, I did hear, because, like, there's another one being filmed at the moment, but it's secret where it's going to be. Yeah, I think someone half let the cat out of the bag on the red carpet of the Academy Awards.
Maybe in Australia somewhere?
No, I think it's in Asia, because it's based in a hotel, isn't it? Is that the whole premise? Yeah. So the next series is the secret where it's going to be filmed. It's being filmed at the moment, but I think it's going to be in Asia somewhere. But I think someone almost, so yeah, that'll be cool.
Love it.
It's the best.
The other one was just The Imperfects, and they just did the Samuel Johnson one, and they have two episodes with Ben Crowe, who is Mojo Crowe, who's, you know, Ash Barty's mindset coach and all that, and they were just rippers, you know, and the boys are so vulnerable and, like, it's just so good, like, hearing men talk like that, just going, oh, my God, so many men would relate to this, and the way they're able to just express their, you know, and they sort of go through this process with Ben on the podcast, and it's just so cool to listen to, so good, and I'm just loving them more and more, actually. Their work is just really so important, so.
That's great. Make sure we share all that good stuff in the show notes. And it was really nice to finish on some good stuff at the end of this episode. So, you know, and I think as we said at the start, sometimes, you know, like, it's hard to talk about the, you know, when I say negative stuff, like the heavy stuff, but we just know that we have to then, you know, unpack it and then always say that there's always someone there to support you and, you know, you've got your people and that's, You have to lean into those people when you do have challenging times. So
that's where spreading the good stuff is so important. It's easy to spread the good stuff when things are going well and everything's wonderful. That's not the challenge. The challenge where we all need to do better and really focus on spreading the good stuff is in that, in and amongst that messy stuff.
That's it. And life is messy. Like I always say, we've just got to learn to ride the shit show roller coaster of life and then and still thrive, you know, like it will always be a shit show.
Amen.
No doubt about that. Lovely to chat, ladies, and we'll chat again in a couple of weeks. And thanks again, ladies. Chat soon.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thanks, guys. Thanks so much for listening. See ya.